Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
They're going above 105 kilometers an hour, which is about 63 miles per hour. Now, it's great for saving fuel. And Rich, we're going to vouch for this, I'm sure, from a safety aspect. But the truck going 63 miles an hour is probably a lot safer than a truck going 70 or 75 miles an hour. However, sometimes driving a truck, you need to speed up to avoid something. And that totally removes that possibility for the truck driver. That's the only thing I can say about it as an operator. You certainly don't get those guys coming in with speeding tickets anymore. I think people are better behaved anyway for the most part. But still, I think we do run that risk. But I think people get used to driving with them. What's your opinion, Rick, on these speed limiters? Is for your house right now, is it not?
It is. Actually, it's a rule making. It's not in Congress. The agency has proposed it again. This is a second round with it. There was comments over the first round did not support it. Had it, the agency would have done it, FMCSA, that is. This time, they give us a short window on it. I should look before I got on, but it's a short comment window. I haven't read any of the comments. I can anticipate what they're going to say, basically some of the things you said there. The other thing you're going to see is the argument that was put forward the last time. If we all trucks can only run a certain speed limit, they're going to be on roadblocks on interstates, you know. One truck can't already pass another one, and they'll, of course, you know, you can always try to regulate that away. You put the troopers out there and try to find when the two trucks block off an interstate. But that's always difficult to do. It's a very difficult enforcement. It's a hit and miss deal. And, you know, these guys, they'll figure out pretty fast that they can they'll work on that. Now, the other thing we're talking about is what you talked about. Just like if you do need to speed up, you need to speed up for some particular reason. So, I don't know. Here's what I know about FMCSA, being I spent most of my life there, at least half my life there now. When they decide to do something, they're going to do it. You can have all the comments that you want to have. You have all the positive, all the negatives. And this is not a majority rule procedure. The agency will read them, read the comments, and they'll respond somewhat about the comments. This person said this. This association said this. This association said this. But at the end of the day, it's up to the agency to decide whether or not to implement speed limiters. Now, I can already see, you know, we've got four states, may have more than that, but I'm very much aware of four states, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. They're probable cause states. And when I say probable cause states, the only way they can stop and inspect the driver of the truck is for probable cause. They got to stop for probable cause. So almost every inspection in those four states results in a write-up of 392.2 operating vehicle is excess of the speeds, not in compliance with local, state, or federal jurisdiction regulations, you know. So we always get those write-ups. Now, I can see them walking up to the truck now and saying, where's your ECM receiver? So we're going to plug this thing into the truck now. And, of course, you know, they have every right in the world to do that. Their right to enter upon and inspect the lands, building, and equipment is very clear in the regulations. There is an issue that when a state adopts a federal regulation and they adopt that provision of the regulations, I'll have to look to see where it is, 392-something, you know, a state trooper with arrest authority doesn't really have a right to enter a phone and inspect just because he wants to. Now, he, you know, you take a local police department, for example, they don't have a right to stop a truck, enter a phone, inspect a truck. You know, a lot comes up about whether or not they have a right to search a truck, and absolutely they do not, even if they have adopted the federal regulations of state law. So what we required through the Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program was that the state has to implement a law that says they have a right to enter a phone and inspect. But, you know, now that we're getting into all this other technology and you know, the cab of a truck now looks like a spaceship with all of our gauges and the electronics and all that stuff. And we're getting the anti-lock software, you know, is in the truck. Now we're also getting how fast the truck is run over a certain time. The ECM, and I've been on several expert witness cases where they've downloaded the ECM data, and they know that the truck was operating one time at 85 mile hour. The problem is we don't know what date that was, what time it was, or where it was, because that computer so far is not picking up internet time, as far as I know. But even if it does, it still doesn't tell you where the truck was. And I've seen some expert witness cases on where they allege our driver was operating at tremendous speed, you know. So that'll be the process. But I believe with this administration, you're going to see something come out of it. Now, will there be challenges to it? Sure. There always are. Anytime that you pass a regulation that everybody doesn't agree with, somebody will challenge it. And they'll argue that the due process wasn't notice and comments were not properly analyzed. We, you know, ATA is American Truck Association has won cases in the past saying that we improperly put the rule in, that we didn't really properly consider all the comments. But like I say, I believe in this administration we're going to see that rule. Now, what's it going to result in? We're going to result in problems. You know, one thing I think about every time I think about one of these rules that everybody's not going to agree with, remember the radar detectors?
Sure.
And remember that we had a world of comments saying how they improved safety,
right.
You know, and that's what I use my radar detector for, is let me know if there's an accident up ahead or something. So you knew how much water got carried in that bucket. So if we're going to argue that I need a truck to run higher speeds than the speed limits in most areas, then that same argument is going to come back and say, that's not a good argument. The problem we're going to have down here, too, is like the speed limits in Tennessee, 70 mile an hour. Some of those speed limits out in the flat part of Texas are quite a bit higher than that. Another issue we have is speed differentials. When we have speed differentials of cars and trucks, like we did back in the 60s, trucks, cars 65, trucks 55,
Yeah. Those
contribute to crashes because you've got the slower vehicles, the faster vehicles, Right. And you've got them in the same environment, and we have had a lot of collisions like that. So I don't know. You know, my guess is as good as anybody else's, but I just feel like in this administration, we're going to see this room.
Rick, we didn't get a chance to really give you a proper introduction before everybody chimed on. Just want, if you don't mind, give everybody a background on yourself. Let everybody know where you come from, what it is that you do, and what it is that you bring to the table. Because I'd hate for it to be missed. Maybe just be like thinking that, oh, we just sitting up here running our mouth, and we always try to make sure that we got. We always want to make sure that we got qualified people on board to come and share information with our listeners and everybody that's tuning in with us tonight. So give us a little background. Just give them a little snippet of where you come from and the expertise you bring to the table. I already know, but I want them to know.
Well, you know, I never had a real chance, a normal life. I grew up in the trucking business. My dad was a trucker. My granddaddy was a trucker. My granddaddy was actually received some of the original Interstate Commerce Commission grandfather rights. They hauled livestock from my little hometown down there on the Alabama-Mississippi line here in Tennessee to Nashville. They'd haul livestock north to Nashville to the market, to the slaughterhouses and things. And they would bring what they'd go by the railroad station and pick up what they call merchants freight. And that was the freight coming back to the merchants there in town. So whatever it may be, you know, refrigerator, of course, no one on refrigerator, not many of them, but stoves, whatever it may be. So he did that till the Depression, run out of money like everybody else did, and sold his trucks for what this worth. Well, then my dad went in the trucking business. My dad was an owner-operator for the McLean Freight Lines, out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He operated a flatbed operation in a special commodity division and raised our family on that. So they sent me off to school, you know, and then I went to work for the state of Tennessee as a roadside inspector. And that's who most of our drivers actually interact with. Is the state guys, but I was out there with the state guys for a couple of years, and I started noticing federal guys, they'd come out there, they'd come late, leave early. You know, we were there all day long, and I said, you know, I think I won't be one of them jobs right there. I won't be a federal job. So I actually went to work for the Interstate Commerce Commission, and I was district supervisor in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for 2 or 3 years. Got an opportunity to come back to the Federal Highway Administration, Bureau of Motor Carrier Safety here in Tennessee, my home, and I did. And then I was with the agency, as with FMCSA, Federal Highway Administration, when they created FMCSA in 2000. I was the division administrator of Tennessee. I was, some of the people, I don't think it's a compliment, they call me the head fed in Tennessee, you know. So I did that till I retired. And then I retired, and I've been doing consulting work, expert witness work on truck crashes, mainly for the trucking companies. I do about 90-10. Every once in a while, I take a plaintiff case because the attorneys jump on me pretty bad about not doing all on the plaintiffs, on the defense side of the trucking industry. So I just completed 50 years, what I say, commercial motor vehicle and highway safety.
Wow. Happy anniversary.
50 years, yep.
So you started in 72, Rick?
Same.
You started in 1972?
I went to work, I went to work at Tennessee Public Service Commission in 1972. Now, prior to that, I was in school, college, and my dad's still owner-operator, and I was taking care of his dad would bring in, you remember trip packets?
Right, yeah.
Everything went in the envelope, and then Dad fill out the envelope, you know, where he went from, where it went to, da, da, da. So when Dad got me in college, I think he thought that was my job now to take care of his business for him. So I grew up in trucking business and made us a real good living and raised four kids out of it. Daddy did, Mama did, and we did good. We did good, and trucking was good to us, and I guess we was good to trucking because back in those days, we know you never said no. Somebody said, I got this load, did you get there by then? We'd do it, but I never drove. I drove a little bit for the county highway department during the summers, building roads and stuff, and then I drove a little bit with Dad. Of course, I wasn't supposed to, you know, his lease was clean. But I don't claim to be a truck driver. I just claim to know more about it than most of them people that point Washington, D.C. to run that agency. But I'm being kind about that.
Right. So we got this week right here is a big week and everything, as you well know. It, yeah. You know, CSVA, the crackdown week, as they call it, or the blitz or whatever, started last night, I believe. So... Rick, that's kind of your wheelhouse. That's kind of what you used to do, but you still kind of help out some of us small guys with dealing with situations if we happen to get dinged during an inspection or something like that. So for everybody listening in that may, since we're out here in the heat of things this week, what are some pointers or some tips that you can give to our guys to handle themselves during this week if they happen to find themselves going through an inspection.
I was with the agency when we created this road check week. And my job back in those days, we would go out. The feds would check a few trucks. We had to keep, I think we had to check 32 trucks a year in order to maintain our vehicle inspection qualifications. So we did that. And then what we'd also do is we'd have to gather up the data. That's for all this internet stuff and all this uploading immediately. We'd have to gather up every inspection, count them up, roadside inspection, how many we did, how many defects we found in this area, that area, there, and then total up the out-of-service vehicle, send it to Washington every at the end of every day. That's what we had to do. So it's not really, I hate to say it, but it's not where it's made up to be. That's a CBSA talking point. That's all it is, an agency talking point. We will not inspect any more trucks this week than we check any other time. And they don't ever bother to tell us that, do they? This is the time of the week. This is a week that we can actually measure what we find out there. So we can measure the number of brakes defects we found, the number of light defects, the other maintenance records. But, you know, when I checked in my career, of course, we used to have to check a lot of trucks. When I first came on agency, I had to check 600 a year plus do a lot of the work. That's a lot of trucks. And I think I added up one time, I've inspected on the side of the road somewhere around 10,000 trucks in drive. That's why I look like I do. But you know, I got along with 99.9%, but you know, you're going to run into somebody every now and then you just can't get along with. But about all drivers that I dealt with were professional. They understood what we were doing. They understand what their role was. But you know, what I want folks to think about today, most of the defects that we found, and they found tonight or this week, they'll find this week, are defects that our drivers should have found during their pre-trip inspection. Okay. Guaranteed. Now, I don't expect them to crawl under the truck and do push rod travel or brake adjustment. I don't expect that. But you know, if your lights aren't working, if you hear air leak, if your low air warning device isn't working, you're not wearing your seatbelt. And you know, guys and girls, we know where these inspection sites are.
Right.
Yep. And we still pull up there with a flat tire.
Yeah.
You know, or something of that nature. And what's that, and I don't call it stupid, but what's that saying about you can't fix stupid, you know? But if we will do our good pre-trip inspection, make sure all our lights are, hey, I've seen guys pull over the side of the interstate before they get to a scale site or pull off an exit before they get to an inspection site and check their lights.
Right.
Do that. And, you know, put your seatbelt on. Don't give them a reason to stop you, one. And two is don't give them a reason to write up something that you could have easily fixed yourself. I still have drivers call me all the time and say, well, my lights wasn't working, but I shook the pigtail and put it in. They started working, but he still wrote me up. Well, that's a violation.
Right?
Yeah, it's a violation when you pull it in there.
Right.
So, but anyway, I was looking today. Your ELD's working. Make sure it is. Make sure you got a copy of medical card. Make sure your seatbelt's connected. Walk around that thing. You know, I've said this 1,000 times. You know how long it takes most drivers to do a pre-trip inspection? Ever how long it takes that truck to build up the air pressure so he can release the brakes and go? That's about what most people do.
Yep.
And if you've ever driven a truck, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Most drivers pull in to a truck stop tonight or wherever they rest. They get up the next morning, they don't do a pre-trip inspection.
Right.
They start that rascal up, it'll start there out of there in just a few minutes. And my dad did the same thing. And I tell Dad, I said, Dad, at least walk around the thing, bump the tires, and check your lights. You know, one thing I always thought was interesting, I've always enjoyed this, but how's a driver check his own brake lights? He's got to be really fast. He got to push that pedal and get the back that thing before they fly.
He's in the Olympics, not driving the truck.
Well, you know, back when we had the glad or the hand valves for the trailer, you know, we checked pretty easy. But
right.
A lot of them don't have hand valves anymore.
No, they take a lot of the big carriers take them out because the guys abuse them.
That's right. What they do, they save their brakes and use the trailer brakes. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually hard on the fifth wheel and everything else, and you're not braking evenly. The one thing I tell our guys is, you know, we don't have paper logs anymore. We're all on electronic logs. And whatever you do, don't go and have problems for nothing. When you start your shift every day, you do your pre-trip, take 5 minutes, check tire pressure. And if you've got a tire that's low, if it's really low, you know there's a problem. You're not going to necessarily catch that by smashing it with a tire belt. And, you know, the way the ELDs work, if you end up with a, with a flat tire on the side of the road, you could easily lose, depends on where it is, but you could lose 4 or 5 hours out of your day.
Yeah.
That's your earning time. So I think I've got it through everybody's head. Now, we did buy our last new reefers. They've got the air system, which are, I swear by them. That and disc brakes, I've said it 100 times on this show. I'm totally impressed. But if you don't have the automatic air system, then, you know, a tire pressure gauge isn't that expensive. It's your best friend. Check your tires. It'll save you time. It'll save you money. It'll save you driving over a scale with a flat tire.
Oh, yeah. They can spot them flat tires from the scale house, you know. I wish I knew over my career how many that I saw. We don't like to check everything. First of all, these inspections are not random inspections.
Right.
They're not random. And they'll say, well, it's a random inspection. How'd you select me if it's random? What would you select the criteria? Oh, you don't get no answer to that. They stop you for a reason. Now, it may have been that they just ready for check a trunk and walk up the scale house and pull that rail back, you know. But most of the time, we try to find something to write up. Let's not waste our time inspecting a truck that there's nothing wrong with. And,
right,
you know,
exactly. And, you know, we talk about that on the show all the time. Don't have a bunch of papers sitting on your dashboard.
Organized.
If your windshield's covered with bugs, take 5 minutes. You drive over that plate, and you got, and I've actually said to, I've got drivers, they weren't our drivers, but I've got drivers coming to our terminal, and I said to them, how the hell do you see out of that thing? They're going to pull you over. Or the other thing is, you see people with mounds of paperwork all over their dashboard. And I said to them, if you have a hot summer sun on that paperwork, you could have, they don't have your chair, that's not taking it to my skin.
I think it's a lot of people may think it's a little bit.
intrusive. But I think that gives you an idea of who you want to pull the blend. First of all, when you see a truck and it's filthy, dirty inside, that tells you, that gives you a new insight into that, who that driver is. We had a driver, I remember, a few years ago, and he was with us a long, long time. He was with us 10 years. And he'd done a couple of stupid things, and he was an owner-operator. And one day, he had done something stupid and got a ticket somewhere. And I was so darn mad when he came in, I opened his truck door, and lo and behold, I'm not exaggerating, there were enough sunflower seed shells around his feet. You could have emptied that out with a green shovel. And you know what? I fired him on the spot. I said, you're going to have a crash, and you're not going to have it here on my watch.
Yep.
And everybody was mad at me, and they go, why'd you fire him? You know, and I go, because the guy, that tells you everything you want to know.
I think it does. You know, a professional is a professional. You always pick out a professional, and you can pick out some guys, the girls. I never saw a lady, and I don't know how many of them I checked. I don't have any idea. But ladies were always better about keeping things organized than some of the guys were. But then you saw the guys. You know, when I was in college, I worked for a real foot packing company out of Union City, Tennessee, and I was a truck helper on them trucks. You know, some of them guys swept that thing out every day. Yeah. And some of them washed the windshields, washed the dashboards, and washed the inside of the windows. And you know, about half of them. The other half, you just got into a garbage dump, you know, down there with cans and everything else, and floorboard. But I do believe that's part of professionalism is to keep a good, organized vehicle. And the interior of it, especially, and even the exterior, because if you got a dirty truck, one time we got this complaint. This guy called us. He's all upset. He said, "Y'all need to come up here and see me. I'm tired of these things checking my truck all the time." It's a small truck up in East Tennessee. So me and that time I wasn't the boss, and me and the boss went up there. Nice guy. He was just all upset about it. Every time I go through an inspection site, then they inspect me for some reason or another. My trucks are clean. They look good. And I sat there looking at his door on his truck. And he said, "What do you think you inspect me?" I said, "I think maybe that racing rooster that you've got painted on the side of each of your corners right there." You know?
So, exactly. So here's something right here, Rick. And if people that are listening in, that are watching, if you got a question, if you want to get involved, you can put the question down in the chat. We'll see it. We'll try to highlight it and bring it up and on board so we can get to your question if you have a specific question. But say, like, if you got someone that's listening in right now and they've done, let's just say they've done everything that they possibly could do, have a clean truck or whatever, but they still have the unfortunate experience of getting pulled in, getting the white glove service, and they come out with, maybe get dinged on a couple of different violations. What are some things that, just because they get caught up and have a violation and get written up on something, that isn't the be-all, end-all. But before we get to that, don't want to try to litigate a situation on the side of the road or at an inspection station.
Right.
So if you could kind of walk through the process of how they could properly go about this if they don't believe that they are in violation or dispute a claim that they happen to have a situation with at an inspection station. What's the proper procedure about going about disputing that and maybe even getting that taken off of your record?
But you're exactly right. There is no court on the side of the road. Don't litigate on the side of the road. Don't argue with the guy. And I tell some of my client drivers or some of my clients, let them say what they're going to say. Let them write what they're going to write. Don't make them go back and take a look at what they're going to write, because they may realize there's a little bit overzealous on this one or something. They'll go back and change it. Data cues. I do a lot of data cues for drivers around the country. Don't let me forget to come back to the ELD when you get a roadside inspection, in case I don't. But DataQ is the only process that you can challenge. Now, if you get a citation, you can challenge it in court.
Right.
You have to go to court to challenge. If you get a citation, you cannot DataQ it until after the court date. But a DataQ is where we argue, that the driver will argue, and I may do it for him, that it was an error in the write-up. And for example, when you see a write-up on the inspection, they'll always give you a section number. Always go and first thing and same thing attorneys do, go read the section number. And then read the guidance to that section of the regulation. Now, do we have an argument? I guess I've had 100 drivers call me and say, he said I was speeding and I wasn't speeding. And I said, well, how are we going to prove you wasn't speeding? Tell me how we're going to prove this. If you can tell me a way that we can prove it, then I'll be glad to follow that key for you. And what I generally do is if I think I can win, if I got a pretty good chance of winning a data queue, that is the violation comes off of the CSA SMS website, then I'll tell them, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll file it for you. If I win it, you owe me $250. If I lose it, you don't owe me nothing. That's a pretty good thing. So, but anyway, I file quite a few of them. And, you know, I file some and I win them. But I can't file, if they said, another example. And I actually data-queued this one time. We had a driver down here in South coming up north, up through Tennessee, that first inspection site that I had built under I-65. Not real proud of that. But this driver got an inspection for a breakout adjustment. I guess they put them out of service, but they wrote them up the breakout adjustment. One breakout adjustment's not out of service defect, so they allowed them to go on. You got to have 20% or more. So, anyway, he went straight on up to the TA truck stop at Franklin, Tennessee, which is at mile marker about 60. He got inspected at mile marker about 12, 13, somewhere, or 10, I don't know. So he drove the truck 40 miles to the TA truck, pulled it in there, TA truck stop, pulled it in there, said, just my brake. Well, the mechanic come back and said, man, ain't nothing wrong with your brake. There ain't nothing wrong with your brake. It's fine adjusting. So I data-queued him. We're using the receipt from a truck stop showing that there was no need, that the brake was properly adjusted. They denied it.
Really?
What was to be their argument? Their argument was he could have stopped and adjusted that brake himself before he got to the TA truck stop. That's how difficult it is to win these things. Now, I've won some recently on this agricultural exemption, this first 150 air miles, which is 176.2 nautical miles. I've won some on it where the troopers don't understand what that exemption, the regulations are. So you got to have a pretty good argument. But the lights out, trooper rolled up the lights out, and I told drivers, I said, if you get inspected and you feel like the officer was wrong, pictures, a tire had a chunk out of it, a tire was, you know, had thin tread or something. Pictures are right there at that inspection site showing something at that inspection site that I can relate to your truck. And don't just walk over and take a picture of the tread. Take me a picture of the tread. Back up 10 feet, take a picture. Back up 25 feet, take a picture, and back on up to where I can see your vehicle, identify your vehicle, I can see the tire, I can see where you are. Now, I may very well have an argument. But it's very difficult to win a data queue. I found two recently. You remember the tornado that came through Bowling Green, Kentucky, and killed a lot of people? We had one carrier had two trucks turned over in that tornado.
Right.
Do you know they granted one of our data queues and denied the other one?
Wow.
Now, and we just, you know, and once they deny it, you're done. So you got to try to win these things on the front, not on the back.
Wow.
And I filed with other data queues on acts of preventability. And that's difficult. Because, you know, the driver that hit you has got to hit you at the rear of the trailer, on the side. He can't hit you up or halfway through the trailer or up over your tractor. In other words, if you're going up the interstate, the car comes down the on-ramp and hits you in the front side of your vehicle, they will not determine that to be not preventable. Because their guidance is so restricted on what's preventable, what's not preventable. And now if he runs in the back of you, I can get it determined to be not preventable. But we just have a terrible time because they don't use the American Trucking Association's guidance on preventability of crashes. They use their own. Now,
it doesn't sound like it makes any sense.
Well, you got to remember what the agency, and of course, you know, that's where I've spent my life. I spent 32 and a half years there. And I spent in D.C. around that round table trying to decide how we're going to do something or how we're going to defend ourselves. And this congressman asked this, this senator asked this, how we're going to respond. Now, what they're trying to do is save CSASMS. I'll give you some terrible numbers here. There's 150,000 truck crashes a year in the United States of America. ATA says that 75 to 80% of those crashes are not the truck driver's fault.
I believe that.
That's what ATA says. And Rick Gobble, what ATA says. So if you look at CSASMS rating, not rating, but the percentile ranking, it's based on that 150,000 crashes. In other words, we're going to measure crash risk like the University of Michigan did up there for FMCSA that came up with CSASMS. We need that 150,000 crashes. Now, if 80% of them are not our fault, now we're down to what, 35,000, 40,000 crashes? Guess what now with percentile ranking, it's not valid. It's not statistically valid. Now, let me get back to this other thing I want to talk about. My drivers on ELDs, here's what they're getting us on now. Two things. Personal conveyance.
Right.
And miles without hours. All right, now, look, I wish I had every driver look at me in the face. I say, look here, knucklehead, let me explain this to you. If you run out of hours and you push off duty, we're going to know that truck's still moving.
Right.
And we're going to know that there's some guy behind that wheel. Well, guess who that might have been? It was the guy behind the wheel when they started moving without a driver, and now it's the guy behind the wheel when he quit moving and a new driver jumped on there. That was you. So if you think you can just log off that thing, because now when you pull up the scale site, they don't look at your log book.
No.
They have you to email your ELD data to them. Now, they don't even have to know what the rule is. They don't have to know what the 11-hour rule, 14-hour rule, 70-hour rule, 30-minute break. They don't have to know that because that software comes into what, let me try to think. I think in a minute the name of that software it comes into, and it tells the officer, look, this truck was moving the window drive. Driver or this driver used PC to continue to complete a trip. I mean, we're done. We're done. So if you think you're fooling anybody, you're not fooling anybody if anybody ever looks.
Couple of questions, Rick.
Yeah.
So when it comes to this whole personal conveyance and everything with the ELD, here's a scenario. Say you're within your hours and everything is legal, you pull up and you stop to go make your delivery. Say if you're at one of these grocery warehouses or something like that, and you're sitting there at that grocery warehouse, and they taking 4 or 5 hours to get you done. You're going to run out of hours by the time they get finished unloading. Will it allow you to use personal conveyance or safe haven to leave that because the shipper won't allow you to stay on the yard? Say that there's a truck stop 5 or 10 miles down the road or somewhere where you can stop. Can you use personal conveyance to leave from that receiver to go stop somewhere to be able to take your 7 or 10 hour break?
Good luck. Just good luck and convincing on that. And that's what the guidance says. It says if you're required to leave, you can. But it's got to be. They don't say how far, but if you move, let's say, and I'll give you an example. We had one down at Pulaski, Tennessee, that me and Hank seat. Y'all know Hank, and it was a Wisconsin driver. He's going north out of Alabama, coming up through Tennessee, and he hits this 11-hour rule right as he crossed the Tennessee line, about mile marker 2 or 3, Tennessee. Well, he hit his 11-hour route. He says, all right, I'm going to drive him up here to the rest area. I think it's mile marker 15, 16, somewhere in there. And he said, I'm going to drive up there and spend the night. So he drives up there. It's not that far up. But anyway, he drives up there. And then he gets in the rest area, and the sign there says no overnight parking. So he decides to drive it on up to the Shady Grove truck stop, which is 3 miles up the road. Bad news is they pulled him in for an inspection there at that inspection site. They put him out of service, falsifying his log, using PC in furtherance of commerce. We actually went to court, me and Hank did. We made 2 trips down there, good Lord. Didn't charge them people nothing. I ain't going to do that no more. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. We finally got it dismissed. But their argument was, you got to plan your trip better than that. You can't just take off, and when you run out of hours, then you use PC to find a safe haven. So I don't know, we'd want it in front of the judge. We'd commence the district attorney down there what did we do? We did it in such a way we could adequate and get it taken off. We dismissed with payment of court costs. Now, these folks come from Wisconsin down there, and I hate it for them, but I mean, it's a big deal for these folks. I don't know how much they would have spent, but I guess me and Hank felt so bad about it. We didn't charge the guy anything, but him and the owner of the company came. So, PC, you cannot in other... Now, what's the argument about? Let me give you a good argument. Cattle hauler. He's hauling his cattle to Delhart, Texas, out of Tennessee. Right. He gets in Delhart, Texas. He says, I'll just PC back home in Tennessee. And that's the kind of thing I see them doing. They'll get within 2 hours of home, PC 2 hours to the house after they run out of hours. You can't do that, knuckleheads. And I say that with all due respect.
Where, you know what, the secret is, and I agree with you, and I tell our guys, really try not to use PC because it gets you in trouble. So tell us where drivers can successfully and legally use personal conveyance.
Okay, let me give you an example. Let me try to give you an example. You pull in Louisville, Kentucky, and you unload. And you live in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Right.
Which is south of Louisville.
Yeah.
What is that, about a 80-mile, 90-mile, 100-mile? All right. Now, you go into Louisville, and you unload, and you PC down to Bowling Green because that's where you live.
Right.
Now, come Monday morning, you don't go back to Louisville. Come Monday morning, you go to Nashville. That ain't PC. That's in further to commerce right there. Now, if you go back to Louisville, I'll buy it.
Okay.
But you can't PC that 80 or 90 mile to keep going where you're going to go next. Well, the guy said, well, I don't know where I'm going next. Well, it don't matter. At the end of the day, I can show you that you left Louisville, you drove to Bowling Green, you drove to Nashville. That ain't PC. It don't work that way. Now, you get into the real complicated ones. Let's say the guy unloaded in Louisville, and then he went east or southeast somewhere down there, Somerset, Kentucky, or somewhere down in there, and then he comes back to Bowling Green to load the next morning. Well, how much of that's PC and how much of that's in furtherance of commerce? It's the most complicated situation that we have to deal with, and on the side of the road, you don't have a chance.
Right.
They're going to size you for it, and you're going to try to add a kid. You better be in a position you can explain. You just about got to go back to where you unloaded, somewhere in that area to claim it's PC.
Okay, here's another one, Rick. I'm adverse driving conditions.
Oh, God. All right, let me explain that.
While we got you here, Rick, I gotta try to throw as much as I can.
Right. An adverse driving condition, that's in the regulation. If you encounter adverse driving conditions, you're allowed to add 2 miles to a trip that you could normally complete within the hour of service, right?
2 hours.
We all agree on that, right?
Right.
But I don't have to go look it up. That's what it said. Somebody said, how do you remember all this stuff? I said, because I've been doing it
for 40 years, 50 years.
In fact, when I started with the agency, Our safety regulation book was 100 pages. Our out-of-service criteria was 12 pages. Today we got 700-something pages of regulations, and we got how many pages out-of-service criteria, you know. So I've seen all this stuff come in. I think, you know, if you see it, then you remember it. What is that about? I've taught a world class. By the way, we're going to have a class in Tennessee this year, a motor carrier safety compliance class, Transportation Safety Institute out of Oklahoma City. I tell people I spent 2 years of my career in Oklahoma City 1 week at a time teaching classes out there. Now, I just lost where I was going with that. We're back to PC. Adverse driving condition. Now, if I'm a trucker or I'm a driver, and I know I'm going to hit Atlanta, Georgia this afternoon at 5 o'clock, I am not entitled to two more hours. Because you know what it's going to be like going around Atlanta, Georgia. Now, if it's unexpected, I get to 2 hours. But if you just can't go through Atlanta, Georgia this afternoon at 5 o'clock and expect that you can make it to what's down there, Griffin, Georgia, some town, Athens, Georgia.
Right.
You just can't expect that because you know you're going to hit that traffic. Snowstorm. We used to have drivers call us, UPS drivers call us, say, well, it's snowing in Cincinnati and they're making me go. Can they make me go and I know I'm going to hit adverse driving condition? Well, you don't know you're going to hit adverse driving conditions.
Right. Could be cleared up.
Because they're going to clean the roads and stuff. You got to go. I mean, you're in a forced dispatch. You got to go. Now, if you hit adverse driving conditions up there around wherever, Louisville or somewhere you're trying to get to Cincinnati, then, yeah, you get to complete a trip that you could normally complete within the hours of service regulation with unexpected situations that you encounter.
Now, here's a question. I got one question that just came in. I don't know if you can see it on the screen, Rick, but before
could
we
you
get...
explain the ag exemption? Good Lord. I tell you what, that's the most complicated thing that you've ever and you know, the agency didn't do this.
Before we go to that one, though, Rick, I wanted to kind of touch again on the while we was on the adverse driving condition. Does that adverse driving condition, does it matter where that adversity takes place during your trip? Say if that's in the beginning, middle, or ending portion of your trip, does it matter? Can you use that exemption regardless, or does it have to be during a specific portion of the trip?
Anytime. Now, what you've got to do now with ELD is be sure to annotate it in your ELD.
Got it.
If you just do it and don't annotate it, nobody's going to know whether or not you sit out there or crash where you sit there 2 hours or not. They're not going to know that. So you got to annotate it and explain it very clearly to defend yourself. Now, I'll tell you this. If you do annotate it, then that really puts the officer in a defensive position.
Got it. Okay.
If he doesn't, he's in an offensive position. So this ag exemption, I'm going to give you an example. You know, and this is a data cue I did not long ago. I don't know how I remember this stuff. I wish I didn't. Our driver, it's the ag exemption is if you're transporting agricultural commodities, certain ones, you got to really read that careful. I actually lost one because the agency denied it was an exempt commodity or something. I don't remember. But, I mean, they like everything else. They try. Let me tell you, when you challenge them, they circle their wagons.
They don't like the movie.
Yeah, and they try to come up with everything they can to deny your request. Everything. But in this particular case, and I'll just use Nashville for example, you get 176.2 air miles from where you loaded or unloaded, or where you was going to get a load. 176.2. 150 air miles is not 150, it's 176.2 nautical miles. Now, the way I do that, I actually have got a website that will tell me what nautical miles are. It's a free website. So this particular driver, let's just say he left Nashville. He went to Jackson, Tennessee, and he unloaded. All right, Nashville to Jackson, Tennessee is well within 176.2. It's about, well, it's 200 miles, but actually, it was Camden, Tennessee, which is back this side of of Jackson. So I'm gonna say Camden. I'm gonna get real on 176. That's within 176.2 air miles. Then he drives from Camden to Memphis to pick up a load. Well, once he unloaded, he gets the exemption again because he's going to pick up a load. So he gets 176 Camden to Memphis. It's about 170 miles, I don't know, somewhere. But then once he loads in Memphis, he's coming back to Nashville. He runs outside of the 176 air mile at Dixon, Tennessee. So now he's got the next 50 miles that is subject to regulations. Because within that ag exemption, it's as if the regulations don't apply to you. Absolutely. Nothing applies to you. We have to have a log book. You have to have an ELD. You'll have to have nothing relating to IRS service.
Whoa.
It's a total exemption from the IRS service. That's Congress did that. And Congress did that because these knuckleheads on the side of the road checking trucks over-regulated. But anyway, he got to Dixon, Tennessee. Now he's outside of his 176 air miles from Memphis. So the next 50 miles, 40 miles, to Nashville is regulated. And he got written up for it. So I dedicated him. And I said, okay, he was exempt from Nashville to Camden. He was exempt from Camden to Memphis. He was exempt from Memphis back up to Dixon. Now he's regulated for the last 40 miles. Well, he didn't have a logbook.
Right.
I said, but they had time records. What do you mean they had time records? If you operate within 150 air miles, you keep time records in lieu of logbooks.
Right.
Now, I'm going to tell you, there's probably about 6 or 7 people in this country can figure his ag exemption out. I just got through, just still working on one. It's a Department of Labor complaint where our drivers complained about us requiring him to operate outside, operate more hours permitted by the regulation. And it was a pretty complicated trip. I had to print out maps and have to show in there. So I don't know where we're going to come out with that, but I'm going to tell you, when I wrote that thing, I was confused.
Gotcha. Well, Rick, I'm looking at the time. We don't blew through our little time period, our little hour along with you. It never seems like we have enough time whenever we have you on board with us. So we need to try to make this a more of a regular occurrence. So let the people know how they can get in contact with you, Rick, if they happen to get into a situation, get dinged up this week with the whole road check and all that stuff, if they may need your assistance or your services, how can they get in contact with you?
My phone number, BR5419. I'm kidding. if you need me, you can find me. Get on the internet, look for Rick Gobble, you'll find me. And it's got all my contact information. But hey, I'll tell you what, stay out of trouble where you don't need me.
But if you do, he's damn good to know, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. We'll see.
Well, Rick, we appreciate you again for taking time out of your schedule to come on and join us and explain and break these complex situations down for us. Because I tell you, we need someone that had as much experience as you have to kind of help break these things down into more of a more common sense so that we can understand them on a more layman terms. So we definitely appreciate you for doing so.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thanks. Be safe, and thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome. All right, bye, guys.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Chuck.
Yeah, if anybody wants to get a hold of me, extension, it's changing, but it's still 203 this week. Phone number is 1-800-388-4352, or better yet, send me an email, just chuck@traffix.com. If you need to get set up with Traffix as a carrier, I'll help you. If there's anything you need to know about the trucking or brokerage business, I can help any of our listeners. That's what I like to do, is help our listeners with any business challenges they're having. And with that, Rico, I'll let you back her in a hole for another week.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us with the Racing Lanes podcast. Thank you for being patient with us as we go through this little transition as we're trying to migrate over to a different type of technology where we're trying to do video. We have the YouTube channel up and running right now, so we're streaming live on YouTube. Hopefully, I did a double check. We were streaming live on Instagram as well on the Rakes and Lanes Instagram page, and we're also streaming live to Facebook, the Facebook Rakes and Lanes page. So thank you guys for taking being patient with us while we're trying to work this thing out. We're still going to try to incorporate the blog talk so that you can still be able to call in and ask questions live. But in the meantime, until we get that part of the technology figured out, always feel free to drop a comment into the section under the stream, and we should be able to see it on our end. So we just want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your schedule to join us. And whether you're looking at us on a rebroadcast or you're looking at this later than other than the live, still go ahead and put a question down in the chat. If you got something that you would like for us to cover on any future show, just drop it in there. We'll do our best to make sure that we try to read the comments and respond to them in a timely manner. And with that being said, we want to thank you guys for doing so, for being here with us. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a little bit of time to hang out with us. We are grateful that you did so. Be safe out there, everybody. Stay healthy. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and God willing, we'll talk at the same time, same place next week. God bless you and good night.
Catch you on the flip flop. God bless.
All right. Ooh.